passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-rest in sight. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock, and I am joined by the notorious WAI. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, not so bad, John. How are you?
I'm very tired. I'm just going to disclose it. This is just it was a busy day. Busy day from like start to finish.
Wednesdays are really busy for you. Multiple shows, news updates.
It wasn't just work, it was just the whole day in general. I just had lots of stuff going on, but here we are at the end of it all, and here to discuss more pro wrestling, more of whatever comes up.
Can you look at maybe wrestling as any sort of escape from, I guess, your other troubles?
Wait, I'm trying to escape wrestling. That's the game, okay? No, it just pulls me back. Goodness, on a nightly basis. No, it's not an escape. I can enjoy pro wrestling, but no, it's not an escape per se.
Gotcha. All right.
But we are all here to chat about the final Dynamite going into Forbidden Door weekend. And as we speak, that crowd in Buffalo is sitting. That was just halftime. Okay. Now they've got Collision to sit through. So, I mean, they're going to be there close to midnight in that arena.
I mean, it kind of is a bit of a pay-per-view that they're going to get themselves, at least in terms of length. So yeah, I mean, this actually on paper looked like a really good show, just Dynamite itself. And I'm sure coupling Collision with some special attraction matches with a New Japan roster. I felt like this one, I really would have liked to have known even before, cause I might've actually considered going.
That's a larger issue. That I think you could definitely look at times is, you know, and it's tough. It's tough to promote TV matches that far in advance. I will say they have given you a good week now for this Chicago show coming out of Forbidden Door is a bigger than usual one. I'm very surprised they're doing the Jeff Jarrett match in Chicago as opposed to Memphis next Saturday for Collision. But I guess Chicago's getting the card and or getting that match and a decent sized hint tonight.
Is it just the way the brackets work out?
Well, I mean, you can put your matches whenever you want.
They might want to start their second round matches. Maybe Jeff Jarrett will be in the second round.
Well, I'm just saying for maximum opportunity, where does that Jeff Jarrett match mean more? But perhaps they feel like this is a big match and we need to sell Chicago a lot more than we have to sell South Haven, Mississippi on a Saturday night. So right. We'll get into all of that. In-house notes, we just released the Pollock and Thurston show from today, where we had David Bixenspan returning to the show to chat a lot about WCW. I will say, wait, after this month, I think I got all of WCW out of my system. I think WCW, it's not exactly Montreal, but it's in that vicinity, I will say, after this past month. I'm ready to shift focus from 2001 after this past month. But a lot of great discussion with David Bixenspan, going through the role of Jamie Kellner and, of course, his recent passing and our own kind of thoughts on the final episode, which if you want more of, the award-winning Double Shot is up for your listening pleasure as myself and Way spent about an hour on Tuesday night chatting about episode 4, the finale of Who Killed WCW.
What award has this actually won?
The one I just gave it.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I would consider it award-winning in, quality. So there you go. The Double Shot available right now.
And then on Thursday, we have got MCU Later coming your way at the Post Wrestling Cafe as Rich Fan and WH Park are going to be tackling the Wolverine from 2013.
Mm-hmm. And a guest, I'm assuming. I never know who the guests are beforehand. I'll find out at the same time as everybody else.
They are like our AEW, where you tune in, it's going to be great. You just don't have a ton of heads up in advance.
It's a wild card. That's all it is.
Yes, it is a wild card on MCU Later. So check out that ongoing series. Friday night, Neil Flanagan has been enlisted because I'm going to sleep. So Wei Ting will be joined by Neil Flanagan. And then we transition to the weekend. We've got Collision Course. And then it's doubleheader day for me because Sunday we will have UFC 303 coverage on the site with Eric Marcotte. And then Sunday night, into the wee hours of Sunday night, it will be Forbidden Door. Around midnight Eastern, we will be going live.
I think you're crazy. I don't know.
Crazy. I don't have to.
You're going to do a UFC show in the morning, and then you're going to somehow stay up through the rest of the day and cover what is sure to be a 5 hour plus AEW pay per view.
And maybe they'll just cap it to 3 hours. Maybe the pay per view will just go a cool 3.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But there we go, and that takes us on into Canada Day on Monday. Do you realize it's the holiday on Monday?
No, I'm very happy about that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is all coming your way. Postwrestling.com. And if you are so inclined, postwrestlingcafe.com to get such extra shows as The Double Shot, Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course, MCU Later. It's always a full menu at the Post Wrestling Cafe. You like that one?
Yeah, good. Good.
Okay.
Not bad.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That's a 4 out of 10 from Way. On to the news we go. We're going to start off. I did write a story today about the passing of Sika Anawahi. With due respect to our Samoan listenership, I'm not going to attempt his legal name because this one is, I sometimes challenge myself on some of the names. This one is a little above me.
Give it a shot. Come on.
Oh, man. I don't want to do the man's memory.
Well, you know most of how
I would
pronounced.
Go Liati Sika Amatuawani Anawahi. How's that?
Okay. I mean,
someone is shaking their head in disgust at what I just tried, but he went by Sika.
Yeah, it sounds like a good attempt. And
I mean, he was given this name. We should be honoring his full name. Yes. But yes, it was his nephew that that provided the news on Tuesday that Sika, who is the father of had 5 children, most famously Roman Reigns, Joe Anawahi, and the late Matt Anawahi, who performed as Rosie, and. This image of this picture, when they were inducted into the Hall of Fame, they always bring them out for the acknowledgement at WrestleMania the next night. And when the camera's going across, and then it's, I think it was Finkel who's introducing them, it's like the Wild Samoans, and boom, they just transform back to like 1975, and they've got the exaggerated facial expressions, and I loved it. It was such a great talk about guys who, like, you're gonna have 15 seconds on camera and maximized it. It was this image, so that's mainly why I went with this picture. But you know, he was obviously part of an enormous family that got involved in professional wrestling, and he was one of 13 children, including Afa, who was several years older than him. And the family moved to San Francisco when he was in his teenage years, and then it was, you know, he went off to the Merchant Marines, and when he came back, Afa had already been training to get into professional wrestling, so Sika joined in as well, and together the two went to, their first territory was Stampede Wrestling, and they won titles there. These two won tag titles in so many different territories, but Canada was where they kind of first cut their teeth. It was in Calgary and then going to Vancouver as well before venturing into the U.S. And again, they won belts in Detroit for big time wrestling. They worked Tennessee. They worked WWC in Puerto Rico, Alabama. Their first tour of Japan was with IWE. And then later they also toured with New Japan Pro Wrestling, one of the first tag league tournaments they were involved in the second year that they did the tag league. But their big runs came in the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, where Sika had multiple stints beginning in 1980. And through the first run, of course, especially in that territory, but wherever the Wild Samoans went, these guys were not doing their promos. So they always would have a mouthpiece. And in New York, they had Captain Lou Albano for that first run. They worked Madison Square Garden very early on, and Sika even got a main event at a garden show in March of 1980. Bob Backlund was the champion, and it was a rare kind of high-profile singles match for Sika. And the business for the show, they did really well. Like, they sold out the garden. This is, you know, Backlund at his peak, but they filled the garden. He never didn't do a whole lot of singles matches, but that was kind of a feather in his cap. And they ended up winning their first set of tag titles in the WWWF and losing them at the Shea Stadium show that year in 1980, but then won them right back because they lost the belts to Backlund and Pedro Morales, and Backlund was the champion at the time, so he couldn't hold two titles, so he had to vacate them back when that was the thing in the WWF. That was like the Ultimate Warrior rule after WrestleMania. It's like, oh, you can't have two belts. What do you think this is?
They did just unify them and create a new championship, I guess.
No, they did not. He had to vacate them, and they put them up in a tournament, and the Wild Samoans got the tag titles back. So that was quite the journey. They go to New Japan in 1981, and they are rebranded. Way they spent a long time coming up with, like, what names are going to resonate with the audience in Japan with these two, and they went from Offen Sika, and they were renamed Samoan Number One and Samoan Number Two.
Right. Yeah.
That sounds like a we've booked them, and here we have bestowed upon you. You never want to have number anything attached to your ring name. That's a tough one.
They're basically like the Machines at that point.
In a certain point, yes. But they were part of that one and only tag league they worked in 81, which featured a lot of high-profile teams at the time. Then they went to Mid-South, where Ernie Ladd was their manager at first, and then they turned on him to join with Skandor Akbar. They won tag titles there. In Georgia Championship Wrestling, they win the belts there. And this is an interesting story because they leave the territory to go back to New York, and they never drop the titles. So the Georgia tag titles are dormant for several months. And this is when Ole Anderson, they had been booking Joe Laurinaitis as like this underneath guy. And Ole is in contact with Eddie Sharkey, and that's when he spots Michael Hegstrand and decides to put these two together and create the Road Warriors. And they just show up on TV. They're the new tag champions. They've won this fictional tournament, and that's the creation of the Road Warriors. So it's like obviously a very indirect role in it, but for the time period, the Road Warriors became like the hot act for all these other teams to copy, and became a major tag team in the 80s and into the 90s. And it kind of was precipitated by, you know, the Wild Samoans left, and they came up with this this measure to correct the tag title situation. So they go back to the WWWF, and they have another run with the tag belts. And then we're into the expansion era with Vince McMahon. And during this period, Hogan wins the title. And one of his very first challenges is against Sika in Buffalo, of all places, in April of 1984. So he got another singles match for the title. And then after 1984, they would bounce around. They did some matches in AWA, Jim Crockett Promotions. And then in 86, Sika comes in for a singles run in WWF. And he's well down the card. He's working as an undercard heel, and he's got the Wizard, Curtis Iaukea, as his manager, which is one of the all-time legendary characters, Curtis Iaukea. And briefly teamed with Kamala, but then goes back to working singles. And he's pretty much an underneath guy with the big point of this run being another match with Hogan that did was the big title match on an October 87 edition of Saturday Night's Main Event, where he challenged Hogan. They did like a 10-minute match, and it did like a 9.7 rating on NBC. So, I mean, he had, it was very, very few like title matches he had, but he had like a pretty good track record when it came to the business he drew for the very few times he was used. I would not argue it was, you know, he was obviously not the A side in these matches with Backlund or Hogan, but carried his end of the deal in terms of respectable numbers on network television or at Madison Square Garden. And then his last match in the company is WrestleMania 4 in that battle royal that Brett and Bad News Allen get into the they think that they're the co-winners, and then Bad News turns on Brett. And after wrestling, he's pretty much done by the early 90s. He was heavily involved with the training center that the Wild Samoans ran, which their school they opened up. I didn't realize this. They opened it up in like the late 70s, and lots of their family members came through the school, like Yokozuna, Rikishi, Rosie and Jamal, Batista went through there. A lot of guys got like their start or seasoning at the Wild Samoans training camp, which always was a bit of a pipeline to the WWF, especially in the 90s. And then was honored by the Cauliflower Alley Club, went into the WWE Hall of Fame, the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I would say to a generation now that like it's his link is as the father of like the big star of the era in Roman Reigns. And he's had some cameo appearances throughout this whole Roman Reigns run and the inclusion of the Bloodline. And I'm just, because of the timing of it all, I'm curious if there's any sort of, you know, subtle reference or just direct to when they're doing this Bloodline acknowledgement ceremony on Friday at Madison Square Garden, which has its history. And if they opt to do something in honor of Sika that's worked into the segment itself, it'll be something interesting to watch. But, you know, a pretty prolific tag wrestler. Everyone is familiar with the Wild Samoans that were, you know, just kind of a staple of like many different territories, but in particular in the WWWF.
I have to think that they would do something, you know, tasteful and something to honor, Sika, just given, I think, how much of a big deal. I think they still consider the Wild Samoans in the history of the WWF, and just simply as like, at least on the Anoa'i side, you know, the first link of that family to the WWF. I think is incredibly significant. So I have to think that they would mention it and maybe make a somewhat bigger deal out of it than, you know.
I think they'll go beyond just like the match graphic or something, or like it's there to do something that like to honor him. And it's within the story as well of the Bloodline. Like there's certainly an opportunity there. Some quick notes to mention. First of all, thoughts to Jim Ross, who I feel like we're just has been through the ringer when it comes to health issues. He mentioned that he was hospitalized the other day, was hoping to be home today after difficulty breathing and had to go to the emergency room. Also, Pat McAfee disclosing that the reason he missed Raw, his father-in-law passed away pretty suddenly. He had been recovering from an infection and just died suddenly, and got the call on Monday as soon as his show ended. He did that show with Paul Levesque and Michael Cole in studio, and I guess he was just about to go to Raw, and it's in his hometown, and gets this awful news. So, I mean, and he was back doing a show on Tuesday. I don't think he didn't miss any of his shows this week. So really tough just to get that news out of nowhere. But that was the reason he missed Raw on Monday. Charles Skaggs, just the latest on him, GCW and DDT, they're partnering together for these shows in Japan, August 13th and 14th, and Charles Skaggs is off of these shows after the recent stabbing incident, obviously facing felony charges. That was probably going to prevent him likely getting into the country. And that's the latest. He'll be in court next month, and that's the latest there. Triple Mania, they have announced their card for August 17th. This is the third of three Triple Mania shows. It's going to be headlined by Nick Nemeth and Alberto El Patron for the Mega Championship. Does this look like an AI render of Alberto El Patron, or do you think this is
true? I don't know if it's AI, but it does seem heavily filtered and photoshopped. Sure.
Well, that's going to be the headliner. The big match, they appear to be, well, there's several here. They're going to have a casket match with Vampiro against a opponent to be announced in a casket match as Vampiro continues his retirement tour. There's going to be a Laredo Kid, Matt Riddle match and a Domo de la Muerte match, the Death Dome, where we have several participants announced. The final person in the dome will get their head shaved or will be unmasked. And the big match, though, we have Psycho Clown and Negro Casas defending the AAA World Tag Titles against Dr. Wagner Jr. and Galeno Del Mal and the team. Everyone talks about the Forbidden Door. Well, a recent release allows this team to now come together. Raj Desi, a.k.a. Jinder Mahal, will team with Satnam Singh with Jeff Jarrett in their corner.
Oh, wow. Dream. Okay.
Huge.
Sure. That's, why not? I mean, they could do something interesting. Yeah.
That's Triple Mania that's coming up. I know the card Way is more interested in. It's the next Bloodsport, July 28th. We got Mike Santana against Homicide and the addition of Shayna Baszler. So WWE loaning out Shayna Baszler for her second Bloodsport matches. Is she going to have more Bloodsport matches than WWE PLEs this year? At least singles matches?
There's a very good chance, yeah. And if you ask her, she might be having more fun, you know, doing Bloodsport than maybe some of these other tag team matches she might be having. I mean, she feels special in Bloodsport, and it's a chance for her to work a style that clearly she's quite enjoying. And maybe we'll bring some of that notoriety and credibility back to an NXT or WWE main roster even.
Maybe this is where Maxine's going to have to prove her toughness.
Maxine in Bloodsport?
Maybe Chad Gable books her at Bloodsport.
Goodness, wow. I'm curious to see who Shayna faces, you know? I'm curious to see Anthony Carelli again, if he gets to be on this one. Did you catch any of the
Any of Bloodsport. What were some of the highlights you saw?
I only caught some of the matches, but I did watch Anthony Carelli versus Kazushi Sakuraba, and Carelli looked great. I mean, as he has before in Bloodsport, but
he trained a lot for this match that he was documenting. You know, it's been a while since he's, especially for this level, like this is different deal than, you know, what he could do at, you know, an Impact show where he can get away doing all the character stuff. This is a different
deal. We actually did some interviews with him when he was opening up his gym in Mississauga. And for like, he even back then talked about like the style he really does enjoy is not doing comedy as Santino and Marella. He never grew up, you know, wanting to become that sort of wrestler. He wanted to do battle arts. He wanted to do this sort of shoot style wrestling, and now he's getting to live that out. So I mean, I think he can go a lot further than just, you know, the occasional cameo. Like, he's somebody who I think is good enough and seems motivated enough that you could like build to some title challenges in, at least within Bloodsport. Do they even have a title? I don't even know.
No
title. Maybe it's about time.
Yeah. Well, with his judo background, like that was the Boris Alexiev character he was originally doing in OVW. Like he was being brought up to be like your serious kind of MMA influenced fighter, which was more natural to him. Like it was a 180 of what you ended up seeing that he ran with and had great success with, but very different from their original idea for him back when Heyman was still booking OVW. All right. Final notes, MLW's made several hires. David Sahadi, who had recently been with TNA, has been hired as the promotion's executive producer, and David Marquez as its head of production, which PW Insider had noted earlier this week, and MLW has confirmed both hirings. Interesting to see that they are adding more production support and... Mm-hmm.
Two longtime names and well-known names in the industry on the television side of things. And I think, you know, both great hires, you know, so happy to see that.
And final notes before we get on over to Dynamite tonight, a few ratings notes, and we'll keep these brief. SmackDown and Raw both went against the Stanley Cup final. So it was funny because in the U.S., these numbers did great, and in Canada, they were hit dramatically. So in the U.S. on Friday, SmackDown did 2,336,000 viewers and a 0.73, and they were up 40% in the demo this week. They were coming off a pretty poor number. 40% increase in the demo, a 55% gain with men 18 to 49, and in adults 18 to 34, They were up 78% this week. These were just like, this was tremendous against the Stanley Cup final, which as much as we look at the Canada-US divide, the Stanley Cup numbers are very good in the US as well this year. Like they did really great with, and with a Canadian market too represented. So these were SmackDown's best numbers since April 15th, second for the night on television behind the NHL. And you have to look at this as the CM Punk factor, I would say, was the biggest attraction on SmackDown. And I don't think we've seen the quarters yet for SmackDown, but you would have to think like 20 minutes of CM Punk at the beginning of the show, you would think was going to enhance this audience.
I'll double check to see.
I saw the Raw ones. SmackDown might be up.
SmackDown is up. Yeah. The show did really well, you know, throughout the entire portion. But yeah, the highest quarter was the CM Punk one, 1.02 million.
Mm-hmm. So in Canada on Friday, they fell to 109,000 viewers, which was down 47%, and their lowest audience for a new show, throwing out like their best ofs or being on OLN since November of 2022. And then Raw on Monday did 1,814,000 viewers and a 0.61 going against Game 7, which did more than over 7.6 million in the U.S. and did 7,551,000 in Canada, which is an insane number. Again, if you want the comparable to what that would mean in the U.S., multiply it by about 9. Okay, so we're talking like a program that would do 68 million viewers. This is like not a Super Bowl level, but it's like your championship game. It's not that far off. So this was an enormous game.
What was the number for the game? How many people in millions
in Canada?
Yeah,
about 7.5 million.
Our population is 39 million.
And so, I don't think this includes TVA Sports, which is the French broadcaster. So it was probably even higher than that. Yeah, we're in a country of 30 million people. And 39. average viewership was 7.5 million. So it's just an astounding figure that they did in Canada. So Raw fell to 10th for the night and was down to 151,000 viewers for the night. So it was interesting that even though Game 7 was watched by way more people in Canada, SmackDown was down 46%. Raw was down, it was 47% drop for SmackDown, 46 for Raw. So almost the exact amount or percentage of fans were down for both. But for the Raw quarters, which WrestleNomics has posted, very big spike for the Liv Morgan, Zelina Vega, Dominic segment that topped 2 million viewers and almost hit 1 million in 18 to 49 and was up 19% in viewership from the prior quarter. Also a big spike for the other big talking segment with Damian Priest, Seth Rollins, and Gunther. And it would tell me that, number one, I think Liv Morgan might be like the hottest character, at least on Raw at the moment, if we're crediting CM Punk with being on SmackDown this week. But I thought that, you know, it's certainly a signal that this storyline is really hot at the moment. And I would say like this was now the Rollins Priest segment. They also had the benefit of no ad break, but still they topped 2 million viewers for their quarter. And that's a good sign for your world championship picture as well.
Yeah, really strong, I would say. I think for Damian Priest, like these are metrics that I think help him as well. You know, especially now that we're facing the prospect of him possibly having his title reign end at some time. Yeah, really good for him.
And NXT was the show that fell back down to earth. This was down to 611,000 viewers and a 0.18. So this was their lowest figure since May 21st. So the ride that they had been on, they certainly came down this week. And the final episode of Who Killed WCW, 129,000 viewers and a 0.05, which would have ranked, I believe, well, it was down from last week, which was 148 and a 0.06. So Russo was the big draw. His episode was the big draw this season of episode 3.
I think as sort of like a controversial figure, you can argue he might be the most in this entire story.
Bro, it's about the ratings and who delivered the ratings. All right. That is all of your news, folks. And you know what? We have what's coming up on Sunday, Wei?
Sunday is Forbidden Door.
And once upon a time, finding an affordable price for a pay-per-view was the Forbidden Door. But now, through the good people at NordVPN, they are giving you permission to name your price.
As wrestling fans, we now have access to more events than ever before. But with rising ticket and travel costs, subscription fees, and a growing number of pay-per-views, staying up to date can get expensive, which is why we love telling our audience about NordVPN. In the US, ordering Forbidden Door will cost you $50, but directing your NordVPN to the UK or Australia immediately unlocks cheaper international prices, allowing you to purchase the event at half the price. Using NordVPN, you can also sign up for AEW Plus, which grants you an even bigger discount on AEW's pay-per-views and access to editions of Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision Live or On Demand, commercial-free. Nord continues to give post-wrestling listeners an exclusive offer of 4 bonus months on top of all 2-year plans when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling. That's less than $3 a month for their basic plan. And just for this period, they're sweetening the deal with global eSIM service Saily, offering up to 20 gigabytes of travel data available for use in over 150 countries. Sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling to get your bonus months and free Saily data voucher, 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Let Nord know you found them through us.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Very well done, John.
What a savings!
It really is. I mean, I mean we use it ourselves.
I'm not going to say anything insincere. I use this thing all the time. Yeah, I'll be using it on tonight. Sunday. I used it tonight. I traveled to England for tonight's edition of Dynamite. Mm-hmm. You ever switch up the countries just for fun?
No, not really.
Oh, I feel
why?
Like, where am I going to go to? I just randomly pick. This is the joy I get. Wait,
and how's
my escape? Okay, that's my escape.
Sure. How's the internet from Bulgaria? Is it any different? It might be. I don't know.
Well, I'm gonna be hopping on the red eye to Malaysia for UFC 303.
All right. Okay. That's
my permanent stop for UFC. But okay, on to Dynamite. We go from Buffalo, New York, and they ended up topping 4,000 people according to WrestleTix. 4,045. But you know who was making their big comeback on Wednesday night?
Who's that?
It was the return of the Big Bang Theory, which I'm sure everyone at AEW was just cheering after last week's number, because tonight they got to see on the TBS schedule Penny's first date with Leonard goes awry and Penny finds Sheldon to be an unwilling confidant.
I'm so curious to know when I guess the Big Bang effect will end. When will people just no longer care about a show that's, already done and in syndication? Does Seinfeld still do well now? Or is there a certain time limit for how long people care about old shows like that?
I think it depends on your generation, but the syndication model, it still exists and it's still, You license this programming and you can just play it to death. And in the case of this Big Bang Theory, if you're doing a 0.23 for canned programming that you can run, I just looked at this TBS schedule. It's just littered with the Big Bang Theory. And then it's Modern Family that follows. They're just that's the network.
Well, clearly to try to, grab some of that audience to stick around, they need to come up with some Big Bang Theory tie-ins to AEW.
Well, it'll be, it would be hard to do a crossover. At least it's a one-way crossover. They really can't put these people into old episodes.
Well, sure.
Vice versa.
I'm saying, is
Sheldon around? Who's Sheldon? Can Sheldon pop up?
I think you can cast a Hook as I don't know. I've never seen The Big Bang Theory.
It's
Katsuyori Shibata as Sheldon.
Yeah, with David from Roseanne. I don't know his character. Is that Sheldon? I don't know. I don't know any. I've never watched an episode of The Big Bang Theory in my life, I profess. MJF, who probably is not a Big Bang Theory viewer either, comes out, pretty good reaction, and he's immediately interrupted by the hometown hero himself, Daniel Garcia. And my first observation, there was a lot of leather in the ring. A lot of cows died to produce this segment between their two jackets.
I'm guessing leather is back. You know, a lot of people watching the first X-Men just thinking, you know what, this is a good look. Time to bring it back.
So Garcia assumes that MJF is just here to insult Buffalo, and he warns MJF, my family is here in the front row, points out his mom, and says, I'm going to do something that no one has ever done to you. I'm going to say something nice about you. And he goes to praise MJF's title reign and says that I was watching your reign while you were headlining arenas and making history. And you and I had a conversation and you saw me more than a lackey, but a pillar of AEW. And I said that, and you said, if I could get enough wins, I could get a title shot against you. And you lived up to your word. They had their match last November, and it was one of the most embarrassing nights of Garcia's life, but it motivated him to go on the run of a lifetime. Now people respect me, and instead of just being a pillar, I know I can be the backbone and foundation of AEW's future. But if you start talking shit, you're going to look two-faced, and all of Buffalo is going to come after you. So MJF says, first of all, I've got a shamelessly plug Forbidden Door on August 30th. Oops. It's going to hurt some late minute buys, maybe. Uh-oh. Potentially, if they know they've got 2 months till this Hechicero match.
Well, you can probably watch it on in archive on Triller now.
You could if August you wait 30th. Till August 30th, and you're going to be very confused. where his go home promo for his opponent is, I'm taking on a poorly drawn comic character named Hechicero. And that was the extent of this match, which now that I've gotten our 2 weeks of promotion for MJF's return, this they may as well have promoted. MJF is going to have a live mic in Long Island. That's it. Show up. You'll see. Like, they could not make this more of a nothing match on this show. I was giving it a slight benefit of the doubt that last week, hey, it's going to be an interesting match, but this is the wrong opponent for MJF on this pay-per-view. There is nothing that they have done at all to build this in anything. And this is your big guy in Long Island that I cannot imagine anyone being inspired for a last-minute trip to the UBS Arena on August or June 30th for this match.
Yeah, I don't really, I can't tell you the thinking of it. I mean, if you ask Tony Khan, he'd probably say, well, I think it's a great match, everybody, and it's going to, you know, take place on Sunday, such and such.
He's going to do the go-home promo on his media call on Thursday.
That's right, yeah. But you know how this goes. Like, we've been through this before, you know, especially with an AEW audience. Why is this being booked? Why is it being booked? And that talk alone seemingly is enough to create enough controversy for people to be interested. So maybe that's the build that they're going for. It's the Vikingo Omega build. Why are people complaining about this? It's going to be such a great match. No, it's not. Nobody knows who this is. And that is going to be, that is essentially the build. So we're doing our part, I guess.
And then he promoted that he'll be on Collision next week in Mississippi, but then shifts his attention. Thanks, Garcia, for being the only one to say good things about what he does out here in front of the camera, because some guys are jealous. They think they deserve his spot, but none of them are talented enough to take my spot, and says that, I didn't give you a title match out of pity or because you had some friend in a high position or you were a big name from elsewhere. I gave it because you earned it. And we are like two pit bulls from New York. The pit bulls. Uh-huh. Yeah. They pointed out that another number one and number two tag team from the past. The Pitbulls,
yes. A lot of Pitbulls in wrestling history.
Many. Vince McMahon's favorite nickname. So he pointed out that I whipped your scrawny ass without breaking a sweat, but you have grown since then. So he has a question for Daniel Garcia. He offers him a match at Wembley Stadium for All In. Daniel Garcia's like, does that make sense? I don't know, man. That is the August.
You sure you don't want to give it to Hechicero?
Yeah, I was literally during the first half when he just blew off the Hechicero match. I was like, this would be a much better match for you. You just put this in Long Island, but no, they're going for All In. And that leads to Will Ospreay coming out, and he also compliments Daniel Garcia and says that you've been working hard for an international title shot, and you've been racking up win after win, and doing it quicker than I last in the bedroom, bruv. This guy has to be careful, okay?
I'm just laughing at you recapping something like this.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I had to rewind this to make sure I was listening to him talk about his performance in bed and how quick it is. So he offered that bit of information for us and offers Daniel Garcia the international title shot next week. And let's up the ante. I'll also defend the AEW title against you too. It's like, dude, this guy, it's like, just won the lottery here. He's got an all-in match. He's got two title matches potentially next week in Chicago. And the story here, based on this image, is MJF has been upstaged by Will Ospreay, who gave him a better offer. And then MJF is just telling Garcia to focus on your match next week, and Garcia does his dance. This was a really long segment. I will, even recapping, it took a while. Like, this was like 20 minutes or so. It was very lengthy. And at the end of it, they built to, you know, a match they had been building towards for a while with Ospreay and Garcia. And your knee jerk reaction would have been, this would have been a great city to do it in. But the timing was, this would have been a tough match to pull off before this Forbidden Door pay-per-view.
Sure.
And at least they're giving it the week. The all in match is a
head scratcher.
It's an odd one. It's a head scratcher.
It's the same reaction we're having with the Hechicero MJF match in Long Island. And you're going to get people defending it too. Oh, it's going to be a great match. What are you talking about? Anyway, these are our thoughts.
This has not been like this November match. Like, I had to look I knew these two had a match, but God knows when this took place. I had to look it up. Like, this has never been something brought up by Garcia since. It's not as though this has been the story that, like, he had this rock bottom loss and he had to reassess everything. And it's this MJF retribution that he's been after. This has never been brought up. And now all of a sudden, like, MJF, without any reason of why he's not entering this Owen tournament. He doesn't want to headline Wembley. He wants Daniel Garcia in 2 months' time at the big show of the year. So I'm not doubting these two can build something, but we are really starting, I mean, from scratch for this one. And head scratcher was the result I had of this segment.
It is. I mean, tonight this was essentially used just to kind of create a bigger, you know, war between Ospreay and MJF, with the two of them essentially like trying to ask Daniel Garcia to prom, basically, and who can make the better offer. I'm going to give you an all-in match, and Ospreay is going to give him a international title match or whatever he holds.
This is when Brandon and Dylan both wanted Kelly.
Exactly. Yeah, what I was thinking. Yeah. So, I mean, as a spotlight on Daniel Garcia for tonight, I mean, you know, first of all, anytime he grabs the microphone, he delivers. And he alone, like, through his own talent, convinces you that he's more talented than his current place on the roster. And having certainly your two top stars in MJF and Ospreay both trying to compete to impress him, I suppose, is great, you know, at you know, helping us elevate the perception of Daniel Garcia up to a level like that. But I do question, you know, outside of a Buffalo reaction, how big of a Garcia versus MJF reaction you would get anywhere else. And I'm not saying, again, that they couldn't build to a justified, you know, feeling of that being a Wembley-worthy match. But you're talking about Daniel Garcia, who has made very inconsistent appearances on Dynamite. He might have had singles matches here and there, but he just hasn't feel like a top guy in a long, long time. And to me, like, Wembley is still, it's your biggest show of the year in front of the biggest crowd, and it should be perceived as a WrestleMania-level event for AEW. And at this point, it does not feel like that type of matchup.
I like the intent of trying to make Daniel Garcia the focus of this segment in Buffalo and make him feel important. But to that end, if that was the goal, the match you're left wanting to see at the end of this segment is the one that doesn't involve Daniel Garcia. And I would say MJF and Will Ospreay is the biggest combination of these three that this audience is left wanting to see at the end of this.
And let's maybe, you know, keep things open in saying that, like, this could all just be a way of storytelling where they might, you know, take away Garcia versus MJF later on to replace possibly with an opponent like Ospreay, provided he doesn't win the championship. Like, that could be the story here. But yeah, it does feel like a bit of a left field, you know, type of announcement at this far out, Garcia versus MJF.
And Swerve reacts to this in the back about Ospreay already giving out title matches before he's won. He doesn't have the strength to carry this on his shoulders, and you better have your head on straight for our tag match tonight, and doesn't think that Ospreay has the focus of a champion. He better focus on the Gates of Agony. LIJ's Shingo Takagi, Hiromu Takahashi, and Titan took on the BCC's Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta with a big bandage over Moxley's forehead, courtesy of Josh Barnett. And Danielson is on commentary. And early on, Titan hits a big tope suicida onto Yuta. And then Claudio's in and is going after Titan's mask. And as the match is progressing, they have the graphics teeing up the matches. And there we see the graphic for Kyle O'Reilly and Zack Sabre Jr. And I'm going to venture to guess that Danielson was learning of this match in real time on the broadcast, because this man got giddy when he saw this graphic and said that this is coming up later.
You don't think he would know? Like, doesn't he have a big hand in creative and in all this?
I thought that this was like a genuine reaction from this guy. I mean, he's got a limit of like his hours on a phone each day. Like, he doesn't have screen time, so maybe this one slipped through the cracks of what was coming up for him.
It could be
so right. Nonetheless, it was a very genuine reaction. Claudio hits the giant swing to Titan. Takagi is in with Claudio, then with Moxie. Great combinations here. Mox and Takagi trade these big lariats. Mox bites him, and then Hiromu is in, and as he sets up for the time bomb, Moxley comes in and just blasts him with a chair for the maybe the most blatant DQ in the history of AEW at 10:52, and a brawl ensues.
Yeah. I have to presume maybe this finish might have been politically motivated. You know, you're dealing with
Yuta and Titan were just untouchable in this. Like, this,
I don't know,
that's,
dude.
That's some very political restrictions.
They could be beginning the tally of, like, you know, who from our side is taking pins and who from your side is taking pins, and maybe they didn't want to burn one of those on this match.
Shingo actually pinning Yuta, who Danielson is explaining, I've been training him a lot since he's been coming back, and then Danielson coming to his aid, actually made a ton of sense to go with. Yuta's just come back from injury, and you're building to this match on Sunday, and you're doing the post-match. I think that would have been a very easy idea, but
I would suggest anybody other than Moxley, and I guess in this case Shingo in this match, could have taken a pin without any damage at all. But whatever. I don't think people minded so much. Honestly, like, this was a match that I didn't really have that much investment in the outcome anyway. It was more about the in-ring showcases, and you had some really great ones here. I thought all three LIJ members looked really special here. Shingo and Titan especially in this match. You had some great combinations between Shingo and Mox, Shingo and Claudio, Claudio and Titan. I thought Yuta and Hiromu did some great work together as well. I would love to see like a more fleshed out version of these two factions at war, hopefully on a bigger stage eventually, if it's possible.
Well, then Tetsuya Naito's music begins, and this man wanted to give Randy Orton a run for his money when it came to his arrival. He took forever, to the point that Jon Moxley just jolted out of the ring. He was sick of waiting for this guy to come out and attacks him on the ramp. Takagi and Yuta are also getting into a fight as Danielson leaves the desk to come to the aid of Yuta and have a stare down with Takagi, and the crowd was just, they were excited for this one. Yes, chance, and Danielson just had this plain look of death staring through Takagi, while Takagi is just doing all these facials and insinuating he's going to break his neck. I was sold by this segment.
I think it's the match I might be looking forward to the most. I mean, Swerve and Ospreay for sure, but man, Danielson Shingo to me is like definitely up there in top matches I would make, you know, for this sort of crossover. So this is kind of all this needed, you know, like Mox versus Naito hasn't really had that much press on AEW TV itself, but it's fine. Like, they're all big enough names, and it's for a big prize. And the match is, you know, like, enough to sell itself. Same with Danielson and Shingo.
Jay White versus Rey Fénix for the Owen Hart Cup, the Owen Hart Foundation Cup opening round. The Guns, Penta, and Alex Abrahantes are ejected before the bell rings by Rick Knox, and Phoenix gets yanked during a springboard attempt. So Jay White takes control. And boy, when he was in control, this Buffalo crowd was just sitting on their hands. And as soon as Phoenix started his comeback, they all just got to their feet. It was just the volume change was stunning. Also, they did mention the passing of a Gunther Stomp, Zomf, who was their German broadcaster, and spent a few minutes talking about him and losing his battle to cancer. I actually heard from a colleague of his that stated, like, in Germany, like, this is the equivalent of, like, a Jim Ross passing away. Like, he was very well regarded. And as they mentioned on the broadcast here, not just professional wrestling, which he had a long history with, but the NFL, Major League Baseball, like, a major sports broadcaster who passed away this past week. So White is in control, and then Phoenix hits the PK off the rope, a frog splash, and this wakes up the crowd. White hits a brainbuster, twisting Uranagi, and then the Blade Runner is countered, and Phoenix has him on the shoulders, and White counters into the Blade Runner, pinning Phoenix in 9 minutes and 20 seconds. So this sets up Jay White against either Jeff Jarrett or Card, Wild.
Yes. I really enjoyed the match. You know, I thought their styles combined really well. Phoenix has always looked spectacular. And I think Jay is really good at, like, playing sort of like a slithering, you know, style of heel, trying to sneak in to find ways to execute his like power-based offense. And I think Phoenix's size also helps Jay's offense look a bit more powerful. So yeah, strong match, I felt.
The Patriarchy come out and they just stare down the Bang Bang Gang, and like, this crowd was, they were wanting to turn Christian babyface here. Like, they were being told to pick a side, and they clearly were behind Christian Cage here with a "He's Our Father" chant, and they did nothing. They just stared them down and walked to the back. This match is not needed for Forbidden Door and was not announced for Forbidden Door.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, it might be a collision, you know, coming up at best, but yeah, I don't know. I think that whole thing.
Maybe this will be All In.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, you kid. And maybe they'll tell the greatest story of all time, and we'll be so excited for it by that time if they do go there. But yeah, the whole like House of Black sort of like involvement with this is really strange. So we await to see how all that unfolds.
We go to the Young Bucks backstage, and they state that the Acclaim took advantage of them last week. And Nick explains, "I sometimes get mad. That's why I was trying to use the tag title belts as a weapon." And they still have the tag titles. Jack Perry is going to win the TNT title in the ladder match this Sunday. And the Elite are going to add their wild card into the Owen Hart Cup next week. And the wild card will go to Wembley to become the AEW champion. We will have all the power and all the gold. Which maybe then will be a bit of an argument of why they have such control of this show when Tony Khan has been back for so long.
I don't know. I'm done explaining. But I mean, clearly put here to lead you to think that it's going to be a heel Hangman Page joining them back. If you remember, Page was never fired from the Elite, just placed on indefinite suspension.
I think that's certainly the direction they're sending people in that we will see next Wednesday in Chicago with Jeff Jarrett. And that's like, regardless of who it is, that's going to be a really interesting match to see and what the reaction is to Jeff Jarrett. Like, it doesn't have to be in his hometown. Like, he is going to be such a sympathetic figure in that match because of that segment.
I'm curious to know how many people will have, like, will enough people have seen that segment that aired on Collision and was placed online in order for that feeling to spread throughout the arena. I'm guessing they'll also play it on Dynamite itself. I think it would be wise.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't make this argument too much when we talk about some of these digital exclusives that you know, you only get a portion of it. I mean, I could make a really strong argument that, like, tell me why that 9 minutes shouldn't air. Like, what a compelling speech that you could absolutely just play the whole thing of. Yeah, it will be an interesting match regardless. The Acclaimed come out and they explain they're not scheduled to be here, but they are. So Max Caster refers to the Young Cucks being soft. They can't run the TV production and they can't run this company. And we're going to get our titles back. Bowen says that they are thinking of when the best time is to challenge for these tag titles. and doesn't give us an answer. I guess they're still looking over their dates.
It'll be after Forbidden Door. It'll probably be after spring break next week as well. Yeah,
it's going to be at All In. It's going to be the default.
Just call your shot. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Okada and the Bucks come out with Okada stating, "Scissor me, bitch," and he issues a challenge to you three pricks to a trios match at Forbidden Door. And all I could think about was, you know, tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of Billy Gunn becoming the King of the Ring. And we were this close to him getting booked in a match with Okada 25 years later, but it would not be. As Billy Gunn explains that he happens to know a president and he's got a video. This is always a fun game, is what if the Elite had not come out here? How did they know that all of this was going to play its hand in such a way that not only would the Bucks come out with Okada, they would not issue a challenge for a tag title match or a tag team match or a singles match. They would challenge him for a trios match, and I will step aside and have Tanahashi on. I will have a plane ticket ready for him because he's got to know in advance when he's got to be in Long Island. All of this is going to just come into perfect synchronicity. And it did. Billy Gunn's plan worked to a charm.
There's clearly a mole somewhere within the Elite who might have leaked this information.
Oh, that's possible. Maybe Cutler will be in the Acclaimed. So we get the video of Tanahashi addressing his greatest rival, Okada, and he is coming for him and the Elite, and says Scissor Ace is coming. So it will be a trios match at Forbidden Door. Scissor Ace.
I mean, there's no real pun there, but I don't care. Like, it's hilarious to hear Roshi Tanahashi call himself Scissor
Ace. We actually have that backstory that you remember that Long Beach show years ago when we got Billy Gunn singles match? Like, these guys, they probably traded numbers and they've been in text contact throughout.
We're talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling veteran Billy Gunn, who, I believe that he made some calls and called a favor in from Tanahashi himself. I think this is great. You know, it's it offers some novelty in seeing Okada and Tanahashi reunite. I know it hasn't been that long since Okada has left New Japan Pro Wrestling and had a match with Tanahashi, but still, it's like, it feels novel, you know, to see it in AEW at a time when we never thought we would see it for quite a while. And I think Scissor Ace is really funny. I'm hoping for some, at least a promo between all of them together.
During the wrap, do we get any bar from Tanahashi?
Oh, please. I would love it. Yes.
This is what we're looking for at Forbidden Door. Then Renee is with the officially named conglomeration of Mark Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly, and Orange Cassidy. And Briscoe goes to preview each of their matches for Forbidden Door when Kyle O'Reilly takes over and tries to do his Mark Briscoe-inspired promo. And thoughts?
I thought it was a very good attempt, okay? Okay. I mean, listen, it's like, It's not going to be Mark Briscoe. First of all, it's going to be completely out of character, and it's not going to sound right. But like, as an imitation, like, I was kind of impressed. You were not. You're about to.
No, I think it was done for the intent of being a.
He called it out. He's like, "Is this working?"
Well, Mark gives him some tips. He thought it was a very good attempt, but then refers to Zach Sabre Jr. as fish and chips, a spot of tea, and Peppa Pig, baby. And we got the Peppa Pig reference, which unfortunately Excalibur, not a regular viewer of Peppa Pig, thought he called him Purple Pig.
Purple Pig? Are you kidding me? You don't know Peppa Pig?
I mean, it's for a generation. We also got many references by Mark Briscoe in this rather short segment to the Big Apple on Sunday and multiple references to New York City. So I just hope that he knows where he's going in the state of New York, because Long Island is not New York City, nor the Big Apple, from a non-New Yorker assessing this.
Can he take the train from there?
As long as he's not cutting it too close. I mean, it is, you know, Sunday night traffic and such, but yes. Tony Storm, Mariah May, and Mina Shirakawa against Soraya, Harley Cameron, and Anna Jay. So Storm comes out with Luther, and then Mina and Mariah May come out to this elaborate dance routine together, and Tony Storm is left out as they're showing her. And then Mina just is bypassing Tony during the match, tagging in May, and May's kind of caught in the middle. She's conflicted, not knowing which one to tag. So this allows the Outcasts to gain control, and they're working over May. Saraya then chokes her on the apron, and at one point, Saraya just turns to someone in the crowd and just screams, "I hate you too, bitch!"
Okay, well,
I'm just keeping our bitch count going for this episode. So Storm finally gets the tag. Big reaction as she hits a hip attack onto Saraya. And then Mina tags herself in, so they argue. And there's a backstabber by Jay to Mina, but May makes the save. Storm is only coming in to help May. And Mina hits a pair of spinning back fists, one to Anna Jay, followed by the Mina driver. And they win in 6 minutes and 58 seconds. And afterward, Storm tries to dance with Mariah May. So Mina, getting jealous, goes and gets the bottle of champagne. And as she goes to strike Tony Storm from behind, Tony gets out of the way. And Mariah May gets popped with the champagne bottle. And Mariah May came to her ultimate conclusion here in the ring. This was it for Mariah May.
Well, just for tonight.
Oh, okay.
I predict she'll be back. She'll have the Chad Gable recovery for Sunday. This was, I think, a case where like a can they get along match was well used for the sake of this story. I thought they found a great way to visually show, I mean, you know, exactly what was going on here. Very simply, with Mariah May caught in between these two and having to decide which person to tag in. I think Shirakawa's charisma is really fantastic and seemingly fits perfect with for a Western audience, and I already like put her up there as like one of the Japanese crossover talents we've really been able to see integrate themselves the best, at least, you know, by AEW standards. And you know, I think this is one of the matches I'm actually quite looking forward to on Sunday.
It's been a very good build-up, and like this is a case of everyone has elevated themselves through this story. Like all three mm-hmm. of them have, but in particular, Mina Shirakawa and Mariah May. Like this has given her a lot as well, and you would assume she gets involved in some way in this match. And they have not yet announced the match with Mariah May and Saraya, which is the opening round match for the Women's Owen Hart Cup, but that's got to be coming up probably next week.
Yeah. Also, just on the note of, Stardom crossover talents for Forbidden Door, John Cena in the chat room says they just announced Willow and Tam Nakano versus Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe for 0 Hour.
They announced the countdown to Forbidden Door is on YouTube this Friday. And then we had a video for Mercedes Moné and Stephanie Vaquer, including the line, "Bitch, I've been training and working my ass off." That was our second reference. Moné is backstage. She flew to Mexico to watch Vaquer's title match on Friday. "But where are you tonight? I kicked your ass and it's going to happen again at Forbidden Door." And says that Vaquer has a match at Collision right here in Buffalo. So you had to do some real like brain adjustment here that you're not supposed to believe that there are tapings happening right after Dynamite in this building in Buffalo. And Stephanie Vaquer is not here at the building when Mercedes is delivering this. But she will be ringside on Saturday, and then she will become Two Belts Moné on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. First of all, I think the video packages they've been using for this feud have been really excellent. I think they're a great way to elevate both Moné and Vaquer's promo abilities, and they really do a great job of getting you hyped for this feud when especially these two can't necessarily be in the same place. And Monet's promos, I think, are at a level at this point, like where they've kind of always been. But because we now have our eyes on the match itself, the promo, at least I see as like only a small part of the entire package. So I'm not really as critical about it. I, in fact, just think they're perfectly fine the way I did during her WWE run as well.
The Learning Tree segment. Brian Keith is out with Big Bill and Jericho, and he's in a sling as a result of Joe Hook and Shibata. And Bill introduces the sensei of the sickos, the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho, and states, "When one door closes, another forbidden door opens." And Chris Jericho says, he does his "Hi guys," and he states, "Everyone knows the reason I'm here in AEW. I'm just here for the young guys." And this guy is extremely topical when it comes to this being a comment made by Cody Rhodes that his red flag goes up whenever he hears a veteran stating, "I'm only around here for the young guys." That's a warning sign for him. And Jericho was right on top of this. And then he followed that by referring to Samoa Joe, "But the joke is on you, because I found another partner, one of the toughest men I ever met in Japan, and I got a video from him, but I haven't watched it yet." I'm wondering if this was a VHS tape as well. And he says, "I'm sharing it with all of you for the first time, and this man is a fellow Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer just like me." And we get the video of Minoru Suzuki that someone was so kind to subtitle. I'm guessing Suzuki did this himself.
That might have been, sure.
Or maybe Big Bill did it, because Keith, it'd be hard to type with the one arm. So Suzuki understands that Jericho wants to team with him, but you are mistaken. I want you one-on-one. Are you chicken? I hate your soft way of thinking now. I want nothing to do with the learning tree. I'm coming for your FTW title. And Keith responds to this, says that Jericho isn't any lame-ass chicken. So Joe, Hook, and Shibata walk out and states that the learning tree, much like the Jericho family tree, doesn't have enough branches. And they have studied all of Jericho's matches, and Shibata has come to the conclusion as they play the voiceover. "Oh, brother, this guy sucks." And Jericho and Joe start to fight. He headbutts Jericho. They brawl, and Shibata nails Big Bill with the phone. So at the end of this segment, my conclusion was that it is Jericho and Suzuki at the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But it appears it is still a six-man tag where Jericho and Big Bill have to find a partner.
Yeah.
So Minoru Suzuki is coming at a later date, I guess.
I felt the same way as you until I went online and I saw on the AEW Twitter where they said, the trios match is still on. Jericho and Big Bill have to find a partner.
This was not clear.
It was not very well conveyed on screen. And I guess makes you wonder, why did they do the Suzuki thing at this point? And why didn't they specifically mention the date of when the Suzuki-Jericho match would be? Because this only served to, I think, confuse some of us. Another mystery partner spot available for Bindor.
Zack Sabre Jr. against Kyle O'Reilly with Orange Cassidy on commentary, which meant after all these years, Taz got to ask him about his name, Orange. "Couldn't it be purple?" He said, "My mother gave me this name." And Taz explains that he would trademark that, which was a reference to his discussion with Jordan Grace earlier this week.
What? What do you mean?
So Jordan Grace posted a photo of herself, like flexing, and wrote, "Beat me if you can, survive if I let you." And
okay,
I would say most wrestlers would let that slide. Most. Taz did not care for this and explained that he has this trademarked, and he got enough response to his reply that he had to post a video explaining that, listen, I have worked very hard for these trademarks. I'm very protective of my IP. And that was his
seriously.
Look wow. at Bully Lee Ray. No, you didn't. Be afraid. Be very afraid. So, that was honestly, like, if you were to just roll, like, go through the Rolodex of wrestlers' catchphrases, the funny part being that not only has Chael Sonnen borrowed this, but, I mean, this goes back to, like, Len Denton was the one, "Beat me if you can." And that's where Taz got this and added "survive if I let you" to it. But this was our, Twitter spat of, I would say a half day.
Yeah. It's quite, I don't want to even say anything. I just think it's,
I think that
it's sad when
cooler heads prevailed.
It's sad when legends don't realize when they're being like honored, and whatever. I don't care. Like, well, I like Taz as a commentator. There's nothing about like this crop between Bully Ray and him that suggests that I would like them otherwise.
Well, he made light of it here. Zach is stomping the elbow and they're going to picture in picture. He continues on the right arm, snaps the fingers, and Kyle is battling back with one arm and he's going after the knee of Zach. And He's stating Taz is backing Orange Cassidy. He's like, I hope that you beat Zach. And one of them, I can't remember which one, they're like, is that because Zach's wearing orange? So yeah. Kyle goes for a guillotine, but there's an arm wringer to the injured body part. So Zach escapes, and we just get all these like seamless like transitions. Like each are going for their body part, and each has the answer for the other. Kyle suplexes him into an arm bar, but Zach clasps the hands. Zach then rolls down to a belly down arm bar, and that leaves him open for an ankle lock. He reverses to his own and then regains the submission. They land double head kicks, and then Zach shoots for the takedown, and he gets drilled in the chest with a knee and collapses. Big slaps are traded, and as Zach tries for a triangle, he moves to the Fujiwara arm bar to the injured arm, and Kyle taps immediately in 10 minutes and 58 seconds. A great contest between these two. I really enjoyed this. This is my match of the show.
This was the match I was looking forward to the most, and the one that like I was really almost like.
Danielson was like making popcorn backstage.
I'll bet he was. Yeah,
vegan popcorn, but nonetheless,
isn't popcorn vegan already?
Oh, you can have you can have all types of popcorn.
Okay, this match was it was great. Perfectly matched, you know, both great strikers and submission artists, and I thought they were able to present like a very high level match where it looked like they were both able to communicate like to each other at a very unique sort of language that only these two know how to speak. Just really excellent. Unfortunate that it's not sort of like of the profile of a match that means much in the grand scheme of things. This really was just a setup match for Orange Cassidy and Zack Sabre Jr. And to that extent, I thought Orange Cassidy was pretty funny doing lazy commentary, where he would like his analysis would be like, it's interesting that these two are doing moves that I don't know how to do.
At the end, they were like, are you second guessing things against Zach on Sunday? Nope.
Yeah, he was very funny. But man, I just like tonally, I've wished somebody like a Brian Danielson was calling this one instead, just so that we could put that focus on like just the technical mastery we were seeing between the two. But I mean, that it's just the way the story is, right?
So Cassidy comes to the ring, checks on Kyle, and then during the match, we had the Undisputed Kingdom with Gabe Kidd sitting in the crowd, and they hop the guardrail. They tend to Kyle, and then Zach grabs Cassidy by the collar when Robbie Eagles and Shane Hayes come in as backup. I felt bad for these two because nobody knew who these two were coming to the aid of Zach. And then Tomohiro Ishii's music plays, and he comes out as Orange Cassidy's lone friend and stands by Orange Cassidy. And yet another match that we set up that is not happening with any date attached to it.
It's not, but these guys are all just in town and anyway, right?
They got a cheap flight, a deal. They're not on just a hotel. Hanging out forever, though. They like they want to go home at some point. I mean, why has Ishii flown over here? I mean, this could be on Collision for all we know.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a special attraction, you know, for the fans, as Tony Khan likes to say. There was a lot going on here between like Gabe Kidd's getting involved in all this with the Kingdom, trying to still court Kyle O'Reilly. So it wasn't all that clear, but I imagine a graphic will clear things up in the future.
So Rampage on Friday, this was taped last week in Allentown with the Infantry against Roderick Strong and Gabe Kidd. Orange Cassidy in a 2-on-1 match against the Outrunners, El Fantasmo against AR Fox, Dalton Castle versus Shingo Takagi, and Queen Aminata versus Sky Blue. So that's a good lineup for Rampage. And then next week in Chicago, which they are promoting as Beach Break, has Will Ospreay and Daniel Garcia for at least one title, maybe two. Jarrett against the Wild Card. Chris Statlander against Willow Nightingale, which is the second round of the Owen Hart Cup. We still got first round matches to go, but they're going to the second round already for that one. True. And Pac against either Brian Danielson or Shingo Takagi, whoever wins on Sunday. So that's a very strong lineup for Chicago.
Either match sounds great in that scenario.
And the final match of the night, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay against the Gates of Agony. Minus Cage, so it was not the Cage of Agony tonight.
Yes, they're back to the Gates, yes.
Mm-hmm. Early on, Champion and Challenger are working together on Khan when Khan gets out of the way and Ospreay nearly boots Swerve, but he catches it. And this allows Toa to attack. And their choking Swerve behind Paul Turner's back, and then they build up to a tag to Ospreay, and Swerve ends up sliding through the ropes to Swerve stomp Toa onto the floor. Ospreay hits a Spanish fly, hooks the arms, and he's teasing that Tiger Driver as he looks at Swerve, but takes too long, so Khan blocks, and Ospreay misses, super kicking Swerve, and is hit with a pounce by Toa. They get back onto the same page, and Swerve gives him the assist for a Poison Rana onto Toa, hits the Os Cutter, and they did a great near fall spot because I think everyone thought this was the finish, and Toa kicked out. It was really well done. And Swerve takes down Khan, snaps the arm, and Toa is hit with the Hidden Blade as Ospreay pins him. And the closing shot is Ospreay once again lifting up both titles, but this time Swerve nails him from behind and hits a house call and reclaims his championship going into Forbidden Door.
I really enjoyed some of the double team moves these two were putting together in the closing sequence. I do like them as a potential team in the future, but at this point when they're about to face each other for the title, this was not an instance where a can they get along type of match to me was necessary, and I did not really think it elevated my interest in any way in this match. I think it might have actually lessened my perception of the heat involved between these two. I wasn't a big fan of this sort of matchmaking for this particular show. I would have loved a promo segment, like last week's promo segment, to close, to take us to the go home show rather than something like this, or even individual matches with the two of them leading to a big brawl in the end. I think that would have been a bit more productive in my opinion.
Yeah. I felt, especially the last 3 weeks, like each week of whatever their segment has been, it's just been building and building. It's been strong. And this felt like one extra week that they had to get to the pay-per-view that I can't say at best, it was like a push this week where I think most people are pretty sold on the match, but I didn't think this really pushed people over, especially like, what they did last week and the week prior. This one kind of felt as though it was like, okay, well, we've got one more Dynamite and this was our idea. So that takes us into Forbidden Door. Do you want to quickly go through this show before we do feedback?
Sure.
Okay. We won't spend too much time on the card, but we're up to 11 matches. As mentioned, the 0 hour will feature Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe against Willow Nightingale and Tom Nakano. The Elite, the Young Bucks, and Kazuchika Okada against Scissor Ace, the Acclaimed, and Hiroshi Tanahashi. In this one, I feel that of all these people... sadly, I feel Tanahashi is like your designated guy to take the fall in this match. I don't see them beating.
I wouldn't say so. You don't think they would pin one of the members of the Elite? Well, sorry. Let me think about this. Yeah, no, you're not. Bowens and Caster, because they already have the title shot, I think they could get pinned. But maybe it's more likely that Tanahashi takes the pin too. Sure, I could see that. Okada pins Tanahashi. I think that could be okay.
I think there's a probable outcome of that being how it is. The Learning Tree, which we have two members so far, and TBA against Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata. Will it be another Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer that joins Jericho and Big Bill?
Who are the options, if that's the case?
I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be some wacky option, I feel.
From AEW or from one of the other associated promotions?
I really have no idea. Like, they could do a total, like, just comedy.
Have we seen Katsuyori Shibata paired with anybody from New Japan Pro Wrestling in these matches?
Kenta.
He did a match with Kenta? Oh, no.
The,
you're saying
they did that huge angle with Kenta.
I mean, in AEW?
They have the history. Not in AEW.
That's what I mean. Like, since Shibata, I don't know. I don't know if there's any sort of, like, weird, thing going on there. But I think Kenta would be a good choice for the Learning Tree.
I don't see this one being, I don't know. I see this being like a really quick win for Joe, Hook, and Shibata. That's my thought here.
Sure. And Suzuki, I guess, isn't making the trip. He's not going to be a part of any of this.
Well, he's got to make a trip at some point. He's got to do this FTW title, man. They clearly have set up him going for this title. Maybe that's going to be an All In.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm going to exhaust that.
Yeah, it's all for All In. Yes.
Bryan Danielson against Shingo Takagi.
Ooh, amazing. Looking forward to this one.
They could have Shingo win this one. I think the more likely outcome is Danielson. I don't think people care too much about the outcome of this one. You're getting an amazing match regardless on the Wednesday, and you're getting an amazing match here. On a card like this, I'm always curious what opens the show. I don't think this one opens. It's probably a little later in the show, but
sure,
you could do a lot worse than just starting off with this for 20 minutes.
I truly think, other than the wild card, like, Bryan Danielson is the guy who is the most, I guess, has the most sort of potential to actually win the tournament, and therefore I think it's a lot more beneficial for him to move on versus Shingo Takagi. So
he should be in the final at the very least.
I think so. Yeah. So I pick Danielson.
MJF and Hechicero, a puzzling.
Puzzling, but you know what? Like,
MJF is going to be incredibly popular on this show, and it's just going to be like an exhibition where he's having... And listen, to the actual match, I have no
I'm looking forward
qualms
to the actual
about
match.
The match. I think MJF doing, like, lucha submissions with Hechicero could be something interesting that he sees as a challenge for himself. And I do think it's going to be a super hot crowd for MJF.
MJF is an incredibly underrated technical wrestler, and this presents a bit of a unique opportunity for him to almost specifically focus on that aspect of his game, working like a very unique style of technical wrestling too. So as a match, I'm looking forward to it, but I don't think they've done much, any work in trying to build, you know, the sort of special attraction feeling, you know, for a match like this.
You know what my big question is? Why is this event in Long Island?
Because they want to do a show in the New York market, and this is probably less expensive than Arthur Ashe.
Like, I almost think, and this will upset many AEW fans, like, if you flipped, like, and did this show in Chicago at the Wintrust Arena and Dynamite in Long Island, I think, like, to me, it's, like, if I'm booking Long Island, it's... Like, I know who my big guy... It would be like booking Chicago and Punk is just in a throwaway match on the show. Like, let's maximize when we go to Long Island. So it's always a big deal with this guy. And I'm surprised that, like, this is...
I can't tell you what the thinking is for Tony in booking a match like this, but I mean, they also have Chicago probably saved for All Out. And what else did they have going on?
They're going there on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm saying, what other pay-per-views do they usually do in Chicago?
All of them. I mean, they do. Pretty I mean, they'll probably... Yeah.
They probably
have they announced All Out for Chicago this year?
I'm just assuming it'll be there.
That's their next big pay-per-view in Chicago. That's their...
They just don't want to burn out the market, and you know what? MJF... I think Hedgesero should be cutting some promos on MJF, really.
When
it's up to him online,
give him the whole second hour of Collision. Okay, we're gonna learn everything about Hechicero and why he's coming for this man's injured shoulder. Previously injured shoulder.
Would love that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've spent more time previewing this match than they did building it. John Moxley, Tetsuya Naito for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. I guess conventional wisdom is Naito gets the belt back, and we go to our neutral political corners. Is there any value of a G1 without your IWGP champion and holding off Moxley for the fall? Or is that just a silly option to make at this point?
I don't think it's silly. I think, you know, AEW is hot, and having Moxley with the championship does continue that association. Now, is Moxley, like, hot enough that I could... Like, is it going to piss off the New Japan audience long enough to only see sporadic appearances from the champion? I feel like the answer at this point might be yes. He's already beaten Naito. I don't see him losing two matches to Moxley.
It's the G1 tournament, but it's such a great tool to have when you have your IWGP champion in there, and it means something to, like, what losses you book your champion in. I think the safe bet is Naito gets his title back, but probably they are going to do it in such a way that is, but we will see. Like, look how they booked themselves in a trios match tonight. How are they going to book this match on Sunday with John Moxley, who they are exceptionally protective of, on an AEW broadcast?
Yeah, I think Moxley takes the pin, but I'm curious to see if he springboards, like, in the finish, if there's any sort of next program waiting for Moxley coming out.
You meant does a literal springboard.
That could happen too, yeah.
Zack Sabre Jr. and Orange Cassidy, this will be excellent, I think. Zack is going to be very interesting to watch in the G1. Like, he is positioning this as though, if I don't win a G1, my career is a failure. And this is a wide open G1 for other reasons. I'm not doing a two-way Ray here by previewing the G1 in this match, but I do feel that Zach Sabre
Jr. I think Will Ospreay is going to win this one.
Yeah, with the Zach driver. Yeah, I mean, this is one certainly you could have Cassidy win, but I do kind of like the idea. You do have to split some of these as well. I don't think this, and you know, you do have Naito going over here. This also could be.
What was the result of the last time they did this? You remember?
Of Zach and Orange? Was this not the. I'll look
it
up.
The first one, right? It was in the first Forbidden Door. This is bad radio.
Yeah. You got to have this stuff right.
Hey, Brian, help us. John Cena, you do the research for us. What, whatever. Okay. Whatever. Let's move on.
You don't have a pick for this one?
Oh, I pick whoever didn't win the first time.
Amazing. Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa for the AEW Women's Championship.
Toni Storm, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. I've been so impressed by Mina Shirakawa. I've been so impressed by Toni Storm and Mariah May in the storytelling of this match. I think it didn't start off very, very well, I think, with those sporadic appearances from Mina Shirakawa without much sort of follow-up nor explanation of who she is. But I think they've done such a great job, and I think the story will springboard into a feud between Mariah May and Toni Storm, maybe peaking for All In.
I think that's a really strong direction to go. That is one that should happen at All In.
Yes.
Mercedes Moné, Stephanie Vaquer for winner take all, the AEW TBS title and New Japan Strong women's title. So I guess Stephanie Vaquer, double champ?
I don't think so.
No?
This belt is going back to Moné. The person it was originally destined for, we're going to get some New Japan Strong appearances for Moné. Maybe CMLL appearances for Moné, I wonder.
That's possible. They could do that. And then we have the.
I'm still trying to look up all this stuff, and we have Brian here finally chiming. He says, "I think their last match was that four way at last year's Forbidden Door, acknowledging the Zach promo, which Orange won. So I guess that's what they were counting. I thought it was a singles match. So I pick Zach Sabre Jr.
What if this turns into a four way by Sunday? That'll totally throw you off, won't it?
It could, yeah.
The ladder match. Man, there's a lot of matches on this card. We're at 11. Do we get more matches than 11? I guess the 0 hour has to fill itself out.
Of course you get more matches than 11.
Okay. Kanosuke Takeshita.
They got three rosters to play with. They're not just giving us like, what, you think this is just an 11 match card?
I want an unmasked Ultimo Guerrero to remind people.
He needs to come for revenge, yes.
That guy needs AEW did him dirty on Saturday. Mm. Kanosuke Takeshita, Mark Briscoe, Jack Perry, Dante Martin, Leo Rush, and we still got one more to qualify that I guess will go down on Collision. So, I mean, the story really does lend itself towards Jack Perry winning this. In fact, I can't fathom he doesn't win this, but I do feel the fan sentiment will be behind Mark Briscoe, who I think they should really tease right down to the end. And Jack Perry and Mark Briscoe should have like a TV match after this. I would like to see them set something up for Jack Perry. I think that would be a great kind of TV match for Perry to do a title defense. But I see Perry winning this. I wouldn't overlook this, but this could be really spectacular given the talent that's in here. And I think everyone's going to be watching like with just concern for Dante Martin.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think he'll be playing with that sort of tension, you know, with him doing a big spot and everybody hoping that he's not going to hurt himself. But it seems like Dante and Leo Rush are probably going to break off into something themselves. Kanosuke Takeshita is off to the G1, so he doesn't really need to have anything following this. But I think Perry and Briscoe having some interaction here that might lead to a bigger feud, I think, would be a great way of getting there. And we'll find out about TBD.
And finally, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay for the AEW World Championship. And probably the most interesting match, booking-wise, on the show of where you go. And, Wei, your thought on the best course of action to come out of this show and who is going to be going into Wembley?
I still think it's Swerve winning. That is the best course of action. He's at a position right now where I think he needs this win to solidify his championship run a lot more than Will Ospreay does in winning the championship. Will Ospreay is going to be in this company for several years. He has plenty of opportunities to head into Wembley Stadium with that championship to defend it. I think that there's a longer chase story to be told. And I think for somebody who is as good and as impressive as he already is right now, failing at his first try will only make that second attempt that much bigger. Hey, look at this year's WrestleMania, right? So I think you can tell a longer-term story with Will Ospreay and at the same time solidify Swerve as the champion, the guy right now. So I pick Swerve.
I think that there's only one clear direction that I want to see coming out of this. It's Will Ospreay, who he hesitates. He doesn't go for the Tiger Driver. And he leaves this match knowing that he didn't unload everything in the chamber and it cost him. So to go back to Wembley Stadium, to his home country, and there's only one man that he can redeem this loss, and that's Hechicero at Wembley Stadium. And that is your co-main event.
Oh, poor Hechicero. Come on, catching all of this. I would watch the shit out of that. Hechicero versus Ospreay. I think that sounds
like they'd have a phenomenal match. I will watch that on any episode of
Wembley
Collision
Stadium
or Rampage, whichever one. I would love to see it, but there you go.
Well, long-term story at this point seems to be MJF versus Will Ospreay. Whether or not that takes place at Wembley, we shall see. Swerve's direction looks like it could be Hangman Page.
I think so. I think that's... To me, when I'm looking at this tournament, like the only clear story you would have is, you know, Danielson going for the title in this retirement year, or it's Hangman as, you know, the match that you always had to get to with Swerve.
So, yeah.
There you have it. That is a Forbidden Door. Looks like an excellent show on paper. Looks like a long show, but looks like an excellent show, as do most AEW events. But before we wrap up, we have a few pieces of feedback and super chats if they come our way as well.
We do have a super chat. This one coming to us from big time, long time friend of the show, Robert Pearson, who sends $10 to say, happy birthday, Ahmad. I'm assuming he means our good friend Ahmad Buttons.
So Johnson. Happy.
Maybe it's his birthday as well. And happy birthday to Scrump, who is also celebrating a birthday today. So a lot of friends celebrating birthdays. Does AEW need to find a new market or audience to tap into, much like the WWE did with Total Divas nearly a decade ago? If so, what audience do you feel they could appeal more to?
I mean, it's a really hard question. I think it's fine to have the idea of trying to expand your audience, but I've just seen so many companies that just completely lose their direction by trying to target a certain demographic. When I know we're going back a long time, but when like the Jim Herd era of WCW was, we're going to go after kids, and it meant some like god awful ideas that were, it came to me from like creative minds that have not been around kids for a generation, that this is embarrassing stuff to be watching. And conversely, when were a huge percentage of the audience kids, it was during like the raunchiest era of the WWF, when tons of teenagers were watching that show and kids were watching that show. So I think that sometimes I just think the simple answer is to come up with like, you know, compelling stories, interesting characters, and the audience will come. I don't think you have to necessarily say, okay, what's our audience for teenagers? Let's book a show for teenagers. I think you just go out there, and it's like, I can't say that WWE is specifically aiming for one audience, but it's a show that it has its ups, it has its lows, but overall it's connecting in a way it has not in many years. And you're seeing that, like, we just went through, like, look at SmackDown, CM Punk coming back, and it just rose all tides regardless. So I think sometimes there are areas to reach more people, whether it's through different distribution, like having a strong online presence, being on devices that kids and teenagers are going to be accessing beyond just cable. You should absolutely be tapping into all of that. But I think, like, that's just, to me, for any like media, you know, company, any programming, like, you should be looking at that.
Yeah. So, you know, just maybe using the total Divas comparison, they did try. They did have some attempt at that through All Access, I believe was the name of the show. And I think, first of all, it wasn't a very good reality show. And I don't know if it resulted in much sort of crossover appeal. I also wonder if like AEW is the type of product that is capable of that sort of crossover, at least in its current form. I mean, AEW was formed for and still booked really to this day for a very niche audience, an audience that, you know, cares about something like Forbidden Door, a crossover between AEW and a New Japan Pro Wrestling. Trying to like imagine, let's say, like a I don't know, somebody who might be a total Divas equivalent type of viewer being interested in something like that, I think we'll take a lot of we'll take a really good episode of like a reality show to maybe I mean that's where Edge Cesaro comes in, you know, like a new reality
he's
show
your crossover
new reality show on in, and it's just like, you know, like what are the Garcia twins gonna do? You know, they're just scoping up new wines with that Hechicero or something like
and their
that.
Long lost cousin Daniel.
Daniel?
Huh? Garcia's?
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about...
It's too late. It's too late for me to be throwing these at you. All right. Thank you for the super chat, Robert. An engaging question. Let's go to Andrew here from Cape Breton. A weird show this week as it wasn't up to the standard of last week. Funny enough, my prediction is it will do the best rating in months. I wasn't a fan of the DQ finish in the opening match. It's one problem with this partnership between AEW and New Japan. Some of the New Japan guys do have to win more, and I don't think there would have been any issue having Shingo pin either Claudio or Wheeler. I also wasn't a fan of having Swerve or Ospreay team up tonight, and I feel they should have used Alex Windsor to cut a promo on Swerve. Ospreay was pissed at Swerve with what he said last week, but came out happy and was jumping around this week. Yeah, I can understand that disconnect. You did such a personal like shot against his kid and his wife. Yeah. And and this week, I mean, that wasn't even addressed tonight.
At the very least, it took down the very high level of like personal heat that I think that achieved. Yeah.
The middle portion of the show was good. Acclaimed are still pretty over. Good thing they knew they would get a trios match and be able to play a Tanahashi video. I did think it was kind of cute they did the same thing with Jericho, but he assumed Suzuki was going to team with them too. I also like the women's trios match, and the women's title match is one of the better built matches going into the pay-per-view. Looking forward to Forbidden Door. They got their use out of tapes tonight.
They did, yes. Thank you, Andrew. Let's go up next to Brian in New Jersey, who said this was a packed show with a lot of good wrestling and a lot of good hooks for this weekend's pay-per-view, which I'm looking forward to. Really nice work between Zack Sabre Jr. and Kyle O'Reilly. Nice spotlight on Daniel Garcia, despite not having any presence on the pay-per-view. MJF barely has a presence on it, and I suspect his match with Hechicero will open the pay-per-view or be the second match. At least there's another 2 hours of TV being taped now to put more of a spotlight on Stephanie Vaquer. I popped a little for the Kevin Blackwood cameo before the main event. I didn't notice that. Kudos to the fan who brought this sign for Jay White versus Ray Phoenix. And the sign says, you can call me Ray or you can call me Jay. That's a reference I don't get.
On to Jordan from the Bronx. After the last couple of weeks of solid TV, this episode felt all over the place. The changes and additions to Forbidden Door felt odd and unneeded. There were a lot of people on TV this week, and it became difficult to focus after a while. The wrestling during the night was good, but none of it felt important outside of the Jay White Ray Phoenix match. The changes and edits to Forbidden Door didn't feel necessary. I'll be at Forbidden Door on Sunday with an extra coffee. Hopefully, we're not there past 1 a.m.
I guess what changes are...
Yeah, I mean, like the Brian Keith one seems like that's like... to my knowledge would be like a legit issue, because it seemed like they like that one to me would have had to have been necessary. And the other changes, I mean, they didn't really change any other matches.
Maybe Jordan's under the impression that Suzuki is actually going to be on Forbidden Door.
And you totally, if you just watch that segment, that would have been my conclusion too. So right. I could understand people being confused by that, but it does appear to be a six man.
Yeah, okay, but let's go next to Matthew from Nashville, who says, I like the general direction AEW seems to be headed, but to me, as somebody who doesn't watch everything offered in New Japan Pro Wrestling and CMLL, my only excitement for Forbidden Door is the world title and the Learning Tree six-man. I understand there are big stars in New Japan and CMLL, but they rarely pique the interest of this viewer. Sure, the card is loaded with bangers, but it still feels like wrestling for a niche audience. Yes. I mean, to my point earlier about, you know, the Hechicero reality series, possibly maybe being that crossover appeal. But I mean, it's, you can't argue, though, with the success of this pay-per-view in the past. Forbidden Door is one of the biggest
shows. Until All In was introduced as the stadium show last year, this had become the signature event of the year for AEW and meant two sellouts the last 2 years in Chicago and Toronto, strong pay-per-view numbers for AEW for each one. Now, is it... we're going to see what it means. Like, this was not an automatic sellout in Long Island. Like, they're going to have a very healthy crowd, but there's still tickets available. And the pay-per-view, like, we will find out how much these specific matches and the crossover means by year three, when some of the key ones in Okada and Ospreay are now AEW performers on a weekly basis. So, I mean, it's certainly going to test that, but going on the history of this concept, it's been very successful for them, and this concept has worked. So there you have it. That is coming up, and yeah, there will probably be a lot of attention on whatever the Dynamite number is that comes out on Thursday. Reasonable expectations would be that it will not be to the level of last week and should recover, and I'm sure we will get lots of analysis, discussion, and so forth coming
up. And if it's not... is it more of...
were there any concerts going on tonight that I'm not aware of?
Not that I know of. No,
we did have the NBA draft going on. I don't know how much of a factor that could be, but that was going on. But
I think Sheldon will, and Penny and whoever else is a part of that show, they will deliver. They will come and they will save AEW.
There you have it. save us. Save us, Big Bang Theory. Okay, that's all for us. Thanks for everybody tuning in. MCU Later is on the way Thursday, Friday. Rewind to SmackDown with our man, Neil, and then Collision Course, and we're back. UFC 203, Forbidden Door, the John Pollock doubleheader on Sunday. And that is it. We are out. Thank you to NordVPN.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.